Today on the Iowa Art Showcase, we're going to explore the artistic and psychological merits of the humble quilt. I'm IPR's Jacqueline Hallblum, coming to you from the Iowa Quilt Museum in Winterset, and we are joined by Renaissance woman, quilter legend, and quilt lover extraordinaire, and star of the famed Love of Quilting show, Marianne Fonz. And thank you for joining us today, Marianne.
It's a total pleasure to be with you, Jacqueline.
First of all, I want to find out how you got hooked on quilting.
It's really a great American story because around the time of the bicentennial, I was a young mom with one toddler so far, and I kind of heard about quilts, I think, because of the bicentennial buzz. I didn't know how to quilt. I had always been a creative, and I just marched into the ISU Extension Home Economist right here on the town square in Winterset and asked if there could be a quilting class. She found a teacher. She publicized the class, and I actually met Liz Porter, who became my business partner because she had two toddlers. We both lived in the country. We were kind of going nuts because we wanted something in our lives that would stay finished, unlike everything else. And so she saw the notice in the Madisonian newspaper. She took the class, and that was our start.
One thing that you brought up right here is with quilting, there's so many different aspects, and one of them is making friends and friendship.
Oh, absolutely. And I remember the many years I traveled all over the United States. I think I had every state except Alaska and Hawaii, and Liz taught in Hawaii for 25 years, many, many times. I've been in more church basements than most people. And so I met over the years thousands and thousands of quilters. And I think to a person, mostly women, sometimes men, but you know, 99.9% women would say that making quilts was half of it, and the friendships and relationships was equal to the joy of actually sewing quilts.
You and Liz formed this partnership, well, actually a business, and tell us about how that expanded.
Well, you know, I think anytime someone has had a successful run in life, people think it was all plotted out. And here Liz and I were both college-educated women with young children, living in a small community. And the number of jobs back then, certainly in the 70s, there were not that many. And so we both wanted diaper and milk money. And so we sort of created a job right where we were. And so the teacher that we took from had lived in another community. And so there was a request from other women our age, also in their 20s, who wanted to learn to quilt. We'd had a quilt show during Covered Bridge Days. Many local people that came through wanted to learn to quilt, and so we started team teaching. The reason we did it together is we didn't think we knew enough to teach separately, and we figured if we did it together, we could fake it. And so we faked it very well. And so as we taught, we honed our skills, we learned the right vocabulary for teaching others. There were very few books on the market in quilting in those days. We thought, well, we have degrees in English, we ought to be able to write a book, and we did, and we got it published in 1982, another one in 1984, and then the big book, which Quilter's Complete Guide, is considered by many the Bible of quilt making. We had a relationship with Oxmoor House down in Birmingham that's part of Southern Progress, now owned by Meredith, in fact. We felt there was not truly a complete reference book for quilters. And we pitched the idea to Oxmoor House. They went for it. It was a 3-year contract to produce the manuscript, and it was published in 1993 in hardcover, later that year in softcover. It's one of the best-selling quilting books in history at over 500,000 copies, and it's being reprinted by Dover Publications later this year.
Congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. From going on to writing books, this also expanded even further.
Yes, and the two of us were always looking for more revenue streams. So we were teaching, we were writing, getting book royalties, and our publisher, Oxmoor House, launched a quilt magazine, which became Love of Quilting magazine around 1996. We felt that there was room for another educational television program. This is way before YouTube or any of those kind of things were available. And so we managed to get the funding. We had thought that there would be money in being on public television. We found out, no, you have to raise the money for it. And we did that through national sponsors. And we were not part of Iowa Public Television at first because we were nobodies. We would not have been able to walk into IPTV and get them to work with us. But we did produce our first programming. It got on the national routing and was immediately popular, I think because it was a program with two quilting buddies side by side sewing together, which was very different from the host-guest format of other programs.
How many years were you involved with this quilting show on Iowa Public Television?
We started around 96, and then we sold our business, which had greatly expanded, in 06. And we continued TV for three more years under the sales terms. And then Liz retired in 09. And then my daughter, Mary Fons, who had dipped her toe in quilting, agreed to co-host with me. And so right on public TV, she learned to quilt in front of an audience, actually. And we hosted for several more years. I just retired from creating new episodes just last fall, which would have been 2018. So 20 years, I think, that adds up to.
So Mary must have the quilting gene as well.
Well, yes, you know, my children weren't very interested in quilting when they were kids at home because it was my job, it wasn't my hobby, but they grew up in a very creative household. And Mary majored in theater. All three of my kids graduated from the University of Iowa. And so Mary had sort of dabbled. She'd had some very ill health. And she often says, you know, when your life falls apart, it makes sense to pick up the pieces and sew them together. And so when we started out, I probably handled 90% of the content. And she sort of would agree with me. And we had viewer mail that didn't like her presence there. But others did. And I remember an email came in one morning saying, I don't like the way Mary repeats what her mother says. And in the afternoon, another email, I love the way Mary repeats what her mother says because I'm a new quilter and Mary restates things in a way that I understand. And so gradually we worked together until it was a 50-50 handling of the content, which is one of my greatest thrills of my career.
So you have gone on to do some other pretty amazing things. Tell us about some of the other things you have done in Winterset and nationally.
Well, I have to say, I have not hung up my quilting needle really because Liz and I, we both love making quilts as much as we did in our 20s when we were young moms. But not being a business owner is what enabled me to pursue other things. And of course, the Iowa Quilt Museum, where we're seated today, was not my idea. Someone else suggested it. I thought, okay, let's do that. And so the Quilt Museum has been open, I believe, 3 years now, and it's a fabulous space. If any of our listeners have not been here, you must come to Winterset. We do not collect quilts. We're a display-only museum. We have about four different exhibits each year. We borrow quilts on a specific theme, sometimes with a guest curator. Those hang for 3 or 4 months, then they go home, and we have a brand new exhibit.
Tell us about some of the other things like your Iowa Theater and also your Quilts of Valor.
I'll talk about Quilts of Valor first because the Iowa Quilt Museum actually serves as the national headquarters for the national foundation, which is Quilts of Valor Foundation. I was on the board of directors for about 7 years. When I first got involved, we had awarded about 40,000 quilts to military service members and veterans touched by war. And I believe now the foundation is over 200, maybe inching up on 250,000. So that's happening in Winterset. So during the build-out of the Iowa Quilt Museum, which is in a former JCPenney storefront, which is quite charming, the Iowa Theater, Winterset's single-screen movie theater, closed. And that was a real blow because my children grew up going to movies at the Iowa. My youngest daughter, Rebecca, majored in film at the University of Iowa and was at the time working for the Chicago Film Festival. And so I felt that somebody needed to take the lead to renovate and reopen our beautiful theater. And so Rebecca left Cinema Chicago, and together we began forging the renovations. About a year in, we got our nonprofit status, our 501c3 designation from the IRS, and we could fundraise. And after 2 years and over $1 million, the Iowa Theater opened in May of 2017 with our John Wayne birthplace celebration. And I mean, what would Winterset, the birthplace of John Wayne, be without a movie theater? I mean, it's called the Iowa. It, you see it the minute you reach the town square, and for that to be shuttered would have been terrible. And I was aware that some funds had been raised years ago to transition to digital, which all the little theaters had to do once the studios stopped making actual film. And so nobody really knows what happened to those funds. It's just kind of lost to history. And I knew that someone needed to kind of get that going. And so I can't tell you what a thrill it is to sit in the Iowa Theater on an evening, surrounded with other members of my own community, and have the shared experience that you do not get sitting in front of a television at home.
And now you've started writing fiction.
Well, you know, sometimes, and for anybody listening out there, this is a word of wisdom. It takes a long time to get back to doing what you wanted to do in the first place. I majored in literature as my undergraduate and a graduate degree in literature, and I've always loved writing, and of course I've earned my living writing, but you know, there's not a lot of drama, and so piece A to piece B and press the seams in one direction. And so over the past few years I've studied the craft of fiction. I've done all the things. I belong to writing groups. I read about the craft. I've taken classes for several years at the Iowa Summer Writing Festival in Iowa City. And last year, my first novel, My Life with Shelley, did get an agent in New York. The book hasn't sold yet, but it's about Mary Shelley, the author of Frankenstein. The book is actually set in Iowa City. The protagonist is a high school English teacher who's obsessed with Mary Shelley and Frankenstein. And when the story opens, she's broken her leg, she's laid up, and she's going to finally write Mary Shelley's fake memoir. So the novel includes the exterior story and also Mary Shelley's first-person memoir that she might have written before her death. I'm working on a second novel now, titled Winterset, and it's a reimagining of The Scarlet Letter in 1957, when having a baby out of wedlock and keeping that child was as scandalous, or shameful, if you will, as it was in Puritan New England, which is the case in The Scarlet Letter.
And there's so many different layers to the quilt.
Well, there is, and that's a great way to put it, because a quilt is a sandwich. It has a top, which is the decorated part, the pieced or applique part, the batting, which is in the middle, and then the backing on the back. Those layers are held together with the quilting thread, whether it's machine or hand quilted. There's a whole quilt culture out there that a lot of people don't know about. It's a multi-million dollar industry with millions of quilters. Can't remember the statistics of how many households have a quilter. But in a way, we're kind of underground. There have been different upticks in quilt hobbyism, real big after the bicentennial. Those were largely kind of baby boomers that embraced the hobby. When Liz and I started in the mid-70s, the cotton fabrics weren't there. Now there are quilt shops all over the country, quilt events, quilt guilds. You can go to the University of Nebraska and get a master's degree in quilt history through their fashion department. So it's been going on for a couple of decades now, I think, is the modern quilt movement. And I think this is when the millennial-ish women out there, and more men, realized, and I'm quoting Mary Fonds here, you can't wrap a baby in an iPad. And so the idea that something tactile, something concrete, something soft, something with meaning, something handmade, is a therapeutic element in our modern lives. That's what kind of led to the modern quilt movement, which began online, but now they have actual meetups and conferences. And so it's been a great injection of younger energy into our quilt world.
And with all this energy, it's building on family history, or else creating family history. And there's so many different levels into just having a quilt that either your grandmother or someone in the family made, or made especially for you.
That's so true. And, you know, you're talking about layers, and I'm not the only one who has commented that quilting can appeal to you on a craft level, on a feminist level, on an activist level, on a family history level, on an artistic level. There are so many ways. And, you know, if you just want to put your head down and sew because you enjoy it, you don't need to really know about all those other elements. But for me, they enhance the enjoyment. And speaking on the activist level, before we women even had the right to vote, quilters were expressing political views and attitudes towards, say, temperance on quilts. And with the anniversary of the women's right to vote, there is a touring exhibit that's going to be going around for several years. I'm sure it'll be in the news here, but the Iowa Quilt Museum will be its final exhibition space. And it's several years out. So quilters have always been busy and sort of a secret society, although it's not intended that way.
And the Quilts of Valor are kind of part of this whole thing, too.
Well, yes. I mean, that's a way to express patriotism, which quilters have long done. And I think part of the reason there's such momentum with Quilts of Valor and more people making and awarding Quilts of Valor is for many quilters who have quilted a long time, every member of their family has received a quilt. And while the family members love them and appreciate them, it's kind of different when you award a quilt to a veteran, someone who doesn't even know you. And you are representing the civilian population who is honoring that person for their sacrifice and their service. And it's such a moving experience for everyone involved. I think many quilters think, well, yeah, I'm going to keep doing this. So that's, I think, one of many moving parts of the Quilts of Valor movement.
You have brought quilting to the lives of many people, and now you are a quilting legend, and you and your friend and co-star and co-author Liz Porter are going to be inducted into the Quilters Hall of Fame. Tell us all about this.
That's right. Liz Porter and I are the 2019 inductees into the Quilters Hall of Fame. It's located in Marion, Indiana, in the home of Marie Webster, who was a very famous quilter back in the 30s, I believe. Her quilt patterns were published in the ladies' magazines of the day. She had a mail order business, and her home is the location. And of course, I'm really honored and thrilled about it. I mean, it means a lot more to the quilt world than the outside world. But I've been to the Quilters Hall of Fame several times, and on that wall, I'm going to get choked up, are my heroes. So the quilters that came before me that made quilting in America into an industry where a person such as myself could make a living and raise a family on my own, which I did, the historians, the trailblazers, their pictures are on that wall. And to think that I will be on that wall too just means the world to me.
Well, congratulations to both you and Liz, because this is quite an accomplishment. We're really proud of you for doing this. So what do you want people to know about quilts and what makes them so special?
Well, I would say to anyone who has thought about quilting and had even the least interest, sometimes people say, I don't have the patience. And I like to respond by letting them know quilters are the most impatient people in the world. If you're impatient, you'll love making quilts because that impatience is satisfied constantly while you're putting pieces together. Also, there's a great therapeutic value in making quilts. Your hands are busy. You're focused on the construction, and yet the back of your mind is freed to ponder problems, whether they're your own personal problems or the problems of the world. And you have a quilt when you're done, which could not be said of a golf game. So I would urge anyone who's interested in picking up quilting or learning a little bit about it is to find an independent quilt shop. Here in Winterset, we have Pieceworks just down the block from the Quilt Museum. We also have a wonderful fabric department in our Ben Franklin store. And take a beginner's class. You don't need to be intimidated. It's a way to learn the lingo and also meet some great people that might become your friends for life.
What is your favorite quilt?
Well, that's like asking a person their favorite food or their favorite ice cream flavor. I have made a lot of quilts, and Liz Porter is even more prolific than I have been. And all the time that we were business owners, I hung on pretty tight to my quilts because they were class samples and they were published and they were for trunk shows and so forth. But after we sold our business, I gradually started giving quilts away as wedding gifts. I mean, just all sorts of reasons, raffle quilts for good causes. But there are certain quilts that I just would not be able to part with. And I would say I have maybe 12 or 15 that just are very special to me, usually because of the design itself, because I thought it worked so well. So I don't have a favorite quilt. I will say there is one called American Pie that's probably one of my most ambitious quilts. But I always call my newest quilt my latest, greatest quilt because it's the one I've made most recently. Each quilt is kind of like a love affair. I'm sort of a serial monogamous that way. And so there really is a lot of artistic passion involved, and I'm always in love with the quilt that I've made most recently. And one of my jokes always is that people just don't consider quilters like sexy. And I always say, you know, the librarian has this beat because she takes her hair down, she takes off her glasses, and, you know, she's transformed. But people tend to think of quilters as grannies, you know, sitting in the rocking chair, piecing this patchwork because they've got nothing else to do. And I think that myth came about during World War II because women kind of stopped sewing. They went to work. They took over the jobs that the men who were serving weren't there to do. And the only people that were quilting then were the older ladies, the grandmas, that were not joining the workforce. And I think that stereotype has continued to today. But I would just say, quilters are all sorts of women and more men. They're incredibly creative, and we're a great posse, and if you want to join us, it's really easy.
Where are some places that folks can go to see quilts?
Things have changed over the past 40 or so years. I mean, there are more quilt museums around the country. You can see quilts at quilt shows. Just Google quilt shows and you'll find them. That way you get to see quilts in person. Everyone listening probably knows several quilters, whether they realize it or not. Come to the Iowa Quilt Museum. Quilts are everywhere. They may be in your closet.
And you should definitely get them out. Thanks for today's interview goes to IPR's Chris Fenton and Alexis Hahn, and a big congratulations to Marianne Fons, soon to be inducted into the Quilters Hall of Fame, and a big thanks to Marianne Fons for joining us today at the Iowa Quilt Museum and for focusing on the art of the quilt, and thank you so much, Marianne.
What a pleasure it's been to be with you today.